Facing challenges and overcoming setbacks is part of doing business. Whether you have the expertise to survive them or not could mean the difference between success or failure. Welcome to We Are Women, featuring revealing conversations that provide invaluable insights into the success secrets of female masterminds. A must-listen for every entrepreneurial woman. Now here's your host, Janine Vosper.
Hi, it's Janine Vosper here, and welcome to this episode of the We Are Women podcast. With me today, I have Sally Prosser. Now, Sally is a voice coach, but as her business cards point out, no, it's not about singing. Now, Sally's work is all about helping you find your vocal confidence so you can feel good and make an impact every time you speak, whether that be to one person or at a networking event or to hundreds from stage or at a conference. Now, as a formal TV journalist, Sally reported for Channel 7 and 10 and the ABC before crossing over into public relations and taking on the role as a spokesperson for Urban Utilities, which is one of Australia's largest water companies. So prior to her broadcast career, Sally ran a successful speech and drama studio and holds licensed it. I didn't know that was a word, Sally Bell. Teaching diploma in the field. She also holds degrees in journalism and law. This fusion of qualifications and diverse experiences drives Sally's passion for sharing how each and every one of us can be exceptional speakers and communicators. She works with a wide range of individuals, from journalism students to emerging leaders through to CEOs and politicians. Sally also works with corporate teams, ensuring customers are spoken to with credibility and charisma. I love that word, charisma. Sally is particularly passionate about women finding their voice, and that's her topic for today, as well as other things, which is achieving vocality. Now, don't worry, it is a made-up word, and we all will be explained soon. Sally is an Airbnb super host, a proud auntie of two nieces and nephew, and like most of you, I'm sure, enjoys indulging in good wine and cheese. Now, I've never had anyone say that about the wine and cheese, but I totally agree. Welcome to the podcast, Sally.
Thanks, Janine, for having me. And it's licentiate, which is one of those words you just don't hear described these days. And I think a lot of people think it's a made-up qualification, but definitely a real thing.
Wow. I love it when I learn something new every day. It's not real good when I'm reading out a bio, but it was my fault for not reading that word aloud beforehand.
Well, as I would teach everybody, whenever you're not sure, just always write it phonetically.
Absolutely, licentiate. Now, that's good. I know that word now. Now, you've had an amazing career and so diverse as to what you were doing. And I think, you know, like anything, people always find interest in you being able to, you know, from TV and that's always an interest to people. So what got you into it?
Got into my business now.
Got into, you know, the career leading from one to the other, you know, putting your hand up and getting into journalism. I know you did the degree, but not everyone who does a degree ends up in front of cameras. So.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I started out in speech and drama when I was all through school, and, you know, I was always the person tapped on the shoulder to stand up and give the thank you on behalf of everybody. Even played Romeo in the school play of Romeo and Juliet at an all-girls school. which I think I got because I had the deeper voice, which was quite funny. And then I actually wanted to be a lawyer, and I did a degree in law, and I did the journalism on the side kind of just to break up the law, but soon realised that journalism was much more well-suited to me. I liked telling stories. I liked using my voice to tell stories, and so broadcast journalism seemed like exactly the right fit for that.
Yeah, not too far apart, because both law and journalism need very good communication skills as well. So, yeah.
Yeah, that's right. And
just sort of thinking about that, that's you're a very smart girl then, Sally, aren't you?
Well, look, I think like a lot of things in life, getting through a law degree is just persistence and not giving up.
Learning the stuff and not necessarily remembering it, but and I mean, all of that has led to what you're doing now, and that's, you know, teaching voice and communication. But we mentioned the word vocal qualities, and what, I mean, I work a lot with women, and the podcast is called We Are Women. And, you know, there's that step behind it where it's always for the betterment and improvement of women in business and in life, to give them skills. And is that sort of now where you're moving into as well?
I love working with lots of a whole range of people, but I particularly love working with women because I feel like I've got a real opportunity there. There are things, unfortunately, that we as women tend to do with our voices more so than men, that don't, I say, you know, help us with our cause. And my belief is, if we really want to achieve equality, then every single individual woman, especially women in business or women in leadership positions, if we can all be using our voices well and having the courage to use them in those moments that matter, then I think that will all combine to improving the whole of society's plight towards equality.
And that's where that vocal quality, obviously, that, as you said, that made up word with the voice and
yeah,
the,
I believe it's equality. The role of voice in equality.
Absolutely, and I totally agree with you in that, and to be able to have that level of self-belief and self-confidence to use that voice is not something that all women have, and to be able to use that with authority so it's heard as well is something, you know, extremely important to do. So just tell me a little bit more about yourself and you know, so we can get to know you. And then I know there's a particular story that you've got that you'd like to share as well about that vocal confidence.
Yeah, well, I guess throughout my life, and every woman out there would have different stories, I'm sure, about things that they wish they would have spoken up about, or things that they've thought in hindsight, oh, I could have said something there. And for me, I'd always grown up feeling like women could do anything. You know, my parents were very, very supportive. I went to a all-girls school, and I didn't see a lot of the inequality compared to some people. However, a couple of years ago, I went to a boxing match at Suncorp. It was Manny Pacquiao versus Jeff Horn, the Battle of Brisbane. And I was just there with a couple of girlfriends, as you do. And then when we walked in, we came under attack from the three guys behind us pretty much from the moment that we walked in. They were catcalling, saying explicit things. You know, it was very out of line. Like, they'd spilt their bourbon over our seats. And you know, I mean, what do you expect at these sort of social things? So we're just trying to wipe it off, and they're saying things like, oh, what does it take to get girls like you wet? So excuse the offense, but I'm just trying to paint a picture of how it was very, very inappropriate. And then it escalated and escalated, and nobody around us stood in or said anything. There was even people who said, oh, girls, just ignore it. You're doing well. And I was outraged by that. It took a particular comment. I turned around and said something to them. I said, what's wrong with you? Just watch the fight and leave us alone. To which I was told, you know, to turn my C-U-N-T mug back around. And this is complete strangers in a public place.
Goodness me.
Really bad. To which my friend started filming on her iPhone and got a little snippet of what we put up with. And then he started hurling abuse back at her, at which point I walked out and I looked for a police officer because it was getting completely out of hand. And the first thing the female police officer said was, oh, girls, has it got that bad? Because she'd seen things escalating, and said, grab your friends, we'll move you. And, of course, that infuriated me even more. I said, you know, why should we move? At which point my other friend came down the stairs into the foyer in tears, and they went up there and they kicked them out. And then what ensued after that was very interesting, because my friend just uploaded the video to Twitter. She happened to be a TV reporter, and my other friend was a reporter and I was a media advisor. And so the tweet was picked up by lots of media outlets. And by that night, we were being inundated with calls from journalists to make a statement.
Right. Okay. Yes. And so the statement then was, is that why didn't we have the right just to be there, really, and just enjoy what we want, even though even with all of that, you know, abuse going on, that we shouldn't have to take it. It shouldn't happen in the first place.
Absolutely. But it was just so many different issues all converging on this one thing that happened to me. So the first thing was I didn't really want to speak because, you know, you put your head up and you get shot down. And there was already people commenting on Twitter and social media saying, you must have provoked it. What did you do? Oh, you deserved it. You know, all these things from strangers, men and women, might I add. Some of the worst comments came from women. One woman said, girls, what were you doing at the boxing? Leave the men to their thing and go to the movies. which started a little hashtag thing for a while, hashtag go to the movies. It was quite funny.
Yeah.
Anyway, and I thought, no, I have to say something, because not only was my job at the time to be a media spokesperson, but I felt like I would be just as bad as all those people around us who didn't have the courage to speak up as well. And the behaviour was clearly out of line. And so I did it. And I did a fair few radio interviews, even to New Zealand. I did a bit of TV. Clementine Ford even wrote an article about the ordeal.
Okay. Yeah, so it sort of got bigger and bigger and bigger. Yeah. But it's highlighting the message, isn't it, though? I mean, that because you've got the media contacts, it means that you had the opportunity to highlight it, whereas other people would have just had to put up with it.
That's exactly right. I might add that I didn't reach out to any media. We only did reactive, which meant if somebody asked me, I did. It wasn't like we were putting out press releases or anything like that. Mm-hmm. But it just made me realise, like, God, it was so tough. I was quite traumatised by the whole thing, and, you know, I was getting really negative comments online, and I really struggled. And I thought, wow, I'm a confidence coach. I do this stuff. And as I mentioned earlier, my role at the time was being a media spokesperson. I was an expert in doing media interviews. And it made me realise, wow, having the courage to speak up and use your voice and be able to use it well is so important when these issues arise. And now, being full-time voice coach, I feel like I really want to help as many women as possible find that vocal confidence and vocal courage. Not saying they're going to, I mean, hopefully don't find themselves in situations like I did, but Janine, you'd probably be able to relate as well. Every woman does find themselves in different levels of this kind of thing throughout their life.
Yes. Yeah. And, you know, I'm just sort of thinking that obviously for you and your friends, you had and probably because of the industry you've come from, you have a fairly high threshold to, you know, being surprised or challenged, more so than other people who may have even felt even more confronted by that situation. So, I mean, it was tough for you girls. So how could it be for somebody that just, you know, wouldn't know how to deal with it and cope with it, and then, you know, possibly just remove themselves from the situation, but then they are the ones that lose out, and then it's a big whack to the confidence then as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Or, you know, it could have been three shy 18-year-old girls who'd hardly ever been out, and next thing they feel like that's the way that going out is, or that's the way they should be treated.
And it's not the way that men behave typically at those events. You know, I'm a huge football fan and have been attending all the codes of football matches for a very long time. You get a few yobbos, but you don't usually get something as extreme as that. So it is a shame that it happened. Yeah. But I think, you know, that it happened with you, that it provided that opportunity. You know, there's always a reason for things behind things, but you guys had the opportunity to broadcast it because people contacted you and get the message out that this isn't okay.
That's right. Yeah, we were lucky enough to have that opportunity, which many women don't. But I also feel that sexism is quite pervasive in lots of areas of life. You know, it doesn't just have to be a boxing match. I believe it happens in the workplace. I believe it happens with, you know, comments passed off as a joke at backyard barbecues. And it's not the only reason behind me giving women confidence, because I believe in any part of your life, whether it's for your business or speaking up at a board meeting or anywhere, these sort of skills are very applicable to all scenarios.
100%. I know so many people that I've worked with. You know, one of the occupations which I've found very surprising, that lacks a lot of that confidence to speak up in meetings is school teachers. So they're fantastic in front of a classroom with students, but in a meeting situation, that a lot of the women lack that confidence. That's the word, confidence to stand up and speak at a meeting. And I found, I've worked with so many people from that industry, and I just found that interesting.
Yeah, I think a lot of people derive their confidence from their audience, and especially familiar audiences. So that example that you raised is a fantastic one. Where a lot of teachers, they feel comfortable with the audience, the kids. Whereas I think that it's best if we can all try to derive our confidence from within, because if it's from within, then it doesn't matter what audience we have.
No, and it's not, and it's just confidence of knowing. This is, you know, how I describe it, is just being confident. And it's not arrogance. It's just being confident in your belief in yourself. And we're born with that level of confidence. Absolutely. And I've got grandchildren who I see have this, you know, amazing level of confidence and will give anything a go until they start hearing things that, be careful with that. Just watch that. Just be mindful that you don't hurt yourself. All of these things that which then start challenging their beliefs that anything's possible. And so then we lose that self-belief that we're born with.
Yeah,
absolutely. That's my observation anyway.
And voice is exactly the same way. So if you've seen a baby crying, you know, their whole instrument's being used, the lungs are expanding and the muscles are contracting, and this is why such small people can make such enormous sounds. Anybody who's been around a baby can see that. And just as you brought up, as we grow up, we lose that natural voice. We're told to sit up straight and suck it in and look skinny, and our posture gets contorted, and we're taught to pipe down and not say too much. So a lot of things growing up work against us releasing our true voice.
Mm. Yes. And for the older generation as well, a lot more so, when you were just told to, you know, that what your role was, you know, I grew up in an era where I was sacked from a job because then they had to remove somebody in this role, and there was only five of us there, and it was a window. I used to do display for Myers at Indooroopilly and do window dressing, and I wasn't the weakest link, and I was actually one of the strongest workers, and I was not the last one on, but I was the one that was put off because my husband had a job, because the others were all men.
Hmm.
That wouldn't happen now, but it did happen in the 1980s, and it's just all that belief that I'm fortunate that my parents, you know, gifted me that level of confidence, or else where it came from, I don't know. It's got me into trouble a fair bit of the time as well. But it's still that, you know, and that just, that sort of thing should never have happened then. But my generation has grown up with that more so than, you know, what's coming through now. Yeah, so at least now absolutely. People are challenging it.
That's right. But I think that men and women, I've seen with my clients, you know, a lot of it does go back to childhood. I had a male client who really, really lacked confidence, and he was able to put it down to an experience in year three when he answered a question and got it wrong. And the teacher said to him, better to say nothing at all than to speak up and sound the fool. And he told me that. He recollected that. I mean, a lot of people aren't able to identify those moments and make that connection, but that's what had really stuck with him and affected his confidence his whole life. And likewise, I had a female client, and she grew up in a very traditional, particular religious background, where at the dinner table, the women weren't allowed to talk. It was only the men that were able to make conversation. The women couldn't talk. They just had to clear the table and look after dinner.
Right.
Yeah. So you're right. There's all these things which affect how we feel about her voice, our voice. In her situation, she had this extremely quiet voice. And it wasn't from anything physical. It was just from her growing up feeling like she shouldn't be heard.
Mm. Yeah, one of the ladies that I've worked with, when she was at school, she was a little chatterbox and just chatted all the time. And in grade one, The teacher stood her at the front of the classroom and put a pair of scissors across her tongue and said, if you keep chatting like that, I will cut your tongue off.
Oh, my gosh.
This is to a five-year-old. Now, from that day on, that girl never said anything at school. She ended up not being, just going through all the grades without being able to read well. And she's happy for me to say this because she actually tells this story. And now she only just read her first book in her 30s. And now she speaks on the subject. She's a kinesiologist. She has a totally different level of confidence and belief within herself. But can you imagine that happening to a five-year-old? And so the rest of her schooling was just back at the classroom, not saying a word.
Oh, isn't that terrible?
I know. And it's the people, it doesn't take much, does it? I mean, that's pretty horrible. But as you were saying with your male client, that's someone just saying, don't say anything.
Yeah, and that's why with
you can't say anything smart, don't say anything at all.
Yeah, with the way that I teach, I often say your sound is sabotaged before it's even made, and it's often your inner voice that is sabotaging your real voice because that's where it all starts. And a lot of the work I do is around what you're saying is changing that belief set, changing that mindset, stopping thoughts of, oh, I'm not a good public speaker, I'm not good speaking up, I'm somebody that just stays quiet, I'm a listener, you know, like lots of these things that we think are not necessarily negative, but they are stopping us from being able to release our voice.
Mm. Yes. Yeah, totally agree. And one of the things too, you know, when you first listen to your voice recorded and then you sort of go, that's not me, and because we're hearing it differently through our ears than what we are using our voice. Yeah. And it is a hard thing for people to sort of reconcile with themselves, isn't it? Because they're thinking, that does not sound like me. So then they don't do that where they're in a situation such as being on a podcast or somewhere where they're going to listen to themselves
back
from a recording.
Yeah, absolutely. And I will say we do hear our own voice slightly different to how others do because it's echoing inside our own head, but it's not as different as we think. The main thing is that we choose not to listen to ourselves as we speak. You know, we like a bit of ignorant bliss with our voice. You know, we use it every day, but, oh, God, don't play it back. And when I play clients' voices back in the first session, I think I've got fingernail marks on my door from people saying, oh, my God, do I really sound like that? But like anything, awareness is the first step to creating change. So if you really want to improve your voice, you've got to be able to accept the way it listens, and not the way it listens, the way it sounds. But in the same token, not just saying, okay, that's my voice and accept it, but understand that just like any other musical instrument, if you learn the right techniques and you practice, you can create any sound you want, really.
Yes. And look, that negative self-talk, I mean, I imagine that leads to other problems within your voice as well.
Absolutely, yeah. So if you've got that negative talk, usually that plays out in quite a negative posture and a lot of tension. So tension around the shoulders and often a collapsing through the torso, you know, that defeated kind of posture. Once you're like that, you can't get any oxygen in. And oxygen is what fuels our voice. So if you can't get any air, then you've got nothing behind your sound and you get that crackly kind of strained voice, or it pushes up in the head like this.
And good posture and good breathing techniques, I imagine, would be the things that would assist with that.
That's right. Yeah, I use the acronym. Imagine you're being random breath tested, RBT. So the R stands for getting ready. So you've got to get your mindset and your posture ready. Only then can you get to B, which is the breathing. And only after you've got the good breathing can you achieve a really nice tone, which is what a lot of people come in and say, oh, I want to change the tone of my voice. And then I can just look at them and say, okay, well, we need to go back and fix all that tension in your body.
Yes. Yeah. I worked with someone the other day and she was saying at the end of the day, I mean, I do similar stuff, but I know yours is more the vocal and I touch on it and mine's more in the sales part of it. So we crossed over a little bit with what we do. But the lady I worked with the other day said at the end of the day, after she's been speaking at work all day, she's got no voice left and it's just totally gone. So again, we worked on breathing things for her. And just even in the day that she spent with me, whole voice, and she'd been speaking most of the day, and it actually got better instead of getting thinner as well. So breathing is,
yeah, if you're breathing, posture is so vital. If you're breathing properly, you're nourishing your voice as you speak. And that's why you can go for so much longer. And, you know, sometimes when you can hear if people have been on holidays, often when people are on holidays, they're more relaxed, their tone drops, their vocal cords relax. And you say, oh, gee, you sound relaxed. And that's why. And on the alternate is you can hear when people are quite stressed or upset or anxious because of all that tension and that lack of oxygen you can hear in the voice.
That's really interesting. I hadn't, you know, equated it across to that, but that's exactly right. You can hear it's totally different when somebody's not stressed, and it is. You say to people, oh my gosh, you sound so relaxed.
Yeah, absolutely.
And what makes it sound relaxed? It's kind of a, especially on the phone, it's a bit of a dumb thing to say, but it actually is more relaxed. It's more relaxed time.
Yeah, and that's why good vocal training can be so powerful, because if you can learn how to relax your body and breathe properly, then you're able to use those techniques in high-stress situations such as important meetings or sales pitches or whatever it is. And with our voice, the person we're speaking to picks up on the energy that we're putting out. You know, so if someone sounds really relaxed and confident, the person hearing will also be like, wow, relaxed and confident. So yeah, it can really make a tangible difference to what you're trying to achieve.
Yeah, yeah. Totally. And I know this is a little pet hate of yours and mine, and anyone who's not from Australia, when they hear Australians speak up at the end of their sentences, or Donald Trump for that matter. I don't know whether you heard the speech the other day with him speaking, and every sentence the voice had an inflection.
Yeah, Trump is a fantastic array of examples of what not to do. Yeah, including, and it's interesting as well with Trump, you can put the TV on mute and you can still get a negative message because of the body language.
Yeah, that's a good point. And I often suggest people do that when they're looking at gestures and trying to figure out what somebody's doing. Do we do exactly that?
Yeah,
mute the TV.
But what you're referring to is that rising inflection where we go up at the end of every sentence, like we're asking a question. Mm-hmm. And if people have seen Anchorman, he has that funny part where he says, I'm Ron Burgundy, which has got the question on the end of the auto cue. It's in the movie because it's trying to show that he's, you know, they put a question mark on, so that's why the inflection does that.
Right. Okay.
It is a cultural thing. I think Australians, we tall poppy syndrome, if you ask me, is alive and well. And I think that we love being self-deprecating. We don't want to come across too strong or too confident, all of that. But women especially, men too, but women especially need to be so careful of this rising inflection because it is the sound of uncertainty.
It is uncertainty, and I don't really know what I'm talking about. But it's so funny when they say their name. Are you not sure of that? You know,
hi, I'm Sally. I'm a voice coach. Am I? I don't know. It's the subtext of asking the other person if we have their permission to talk to them and whether we're okay. And it doesn't.
And again, it's that confidence level, isn't it? Rather than just saying, this is me and this is who I am and this is the statement that I'm making.
Yeah, we don't like to own our opinions. A lot of women as well like to throw in a few filler words like, you know. And so I'll say an opinion, but like, I'm not going to commit because if you're not happy with it, I can just back down. So rather than deliver an opinion with a falling inflection, we put all these little get out of jail free cards all through our voice with the words that we use and the inflection we use because we don't want to show our strength too much. This is how I feel about it.
Yeah, that's a good point with that. I wonder what Trump was doing the other day because I don't know whether you saw the interview or not. He said, we're going to build a wall and then we'll go to court and then they'll take it to the next court and then we're going to build a wall and it'll go there. He must have done about 10 in a row.
Yeah, I haven't seen the one in question, but I'll have to check it out.
It'll drive you crazy. But I was wondering why was why would he do it like that? And they've made a lot of fun of it since then.
I'll have to check it out.
As they tend to.
Yeah, it is important, I have to say, you do need the rising inflection, especially if you're not finished. Mm. So if you're, I'm about to give more information and you're really going to like what I have to say. So if you do it in the middle, then that's fine, because otherwise phrases can really lose their impact. So if I say, there's something else I want to say, but you wouldn't know because I went down, and it sounds like I'm finished, and keep forgetting extra bits. Do you know what I mean? So intonation's quite a complex thing, and I work with people to control the inflections and know when to use what, because it's not a matter of just getting rid of the rising inflection. It's about knowing the time and place to use it.
Yes, it's always been one of those things that irritates me. That every time I go into Mackay, I'd turn on the hire car and the person on the news had that, and it would just be one of those things going, oh, she's back here again on the radio. I'll just turn that off until the news is over.
And in the news today, police have found a woman standing by the river.
That's it.
Yeah, well,
you know it. You know it then, do you?
Yeah, I work with a lot of journalists, and it's lots of things that can tend to happen, especially when you're reading rather than just talking.
Okay, so we covered that rising inflection, but what else is there that people, when they've got that negative inner voice, how does that represent in their speaking, Sally?
There's a few different things. One thing I work on with a lot of women, and I'm sure everybody can relate to this, is we throw our voice into the stratosphere. We throw our voice really, really high when we go to make a phone call, answer the phone, or want to sound like we're really friendly. And my joke name for this is the I don't want to be a bitch pitch, because I think that's what's in our inner voice when we use it. And an example is if somebody says, oh, can you do this for me? Oh, yeah, no worries. That's fine. I've got that. Oh, you know, you got to answer the phone. Hi, have I caught you at a bad time? Especially, making a cold call or a sales call, we're always going in so tentatively that we throw our voice so high pitched, which it comes across like we're, you know, lacking confidence, lacking competence. And with women, we need to understand that by using our lower register, we can absolutely still sound friendly, especially if we have a smile on our face.
And that's all it takes sometimes, isn't it, just to have a smile on your face while you're speaking?
Absolutely. I work with people and say, right, I want you to tell this to me like you cannot contain your laughter, like you've just heard the funniest thing, and then start talking, because people can hear that enjoyment behind the voice.
And yes, that I'm just identifying that high-pitched voice now, and it certainly is that lack of confidence when that comes across. And I've even heard presenters use it when they're not quite a disconnect from the audience, or they're trying to deliver something that's a little bit different and maybe a little bit challenging for the audience, that they will use that go up into that higher range. And it is sort of asking permission, isn't it? I'm not confident enough to talk about this and explain it as it is. Using the voice that I've got, I'm going to take it up there.
Yeah, and again, there's a time and place for it. So if you really want to tiptoe into a situation, it is also a tiptoe tone, I call. If you want to approach a bit of a delicate subject with somebody, it's okay to raise the pitch a bit and I'm just wondering if you're free this afternoon. But you don't want to stay up there. And I think you want to be really careful of going into that pitch when you're asked to do something by men. So with 4.5 years in corporate, I would see this dynamic all the time. A man would ask something of a woman and the woman would go into that pitch and say it was no trouble. And I just think we've got to be really careful of that in a professional setting, that we're not just playing out those traditional stereotypes. Because if a man asked a man the same thing, they would never reply in that fashion.
No.
You know, it would be more, I mean, often, we don't want to get too off track, but often it's things like, can you organise the catering for the morning tea? Or can you get a card for someone? You know, there's lots of articles written about how these householdy type roles fall to women in offices. But say,
well, the men, yeah. They're thinking the men wouldn't be able to pick out a nice card. Is that what they're saying?
Oh, well, you know, that'd be right, really. Come on. But say, for example, a man that was asked, you know, can you go and get that photocopying, or can you make, can you put that report or whatever it is? They would often reply, yeah, mate, no worries. In that kind of tone, it's on that equal level. Whereas as women, we often, even sometimes if the titles aren't on the hierarchy, if you know what I mean. So it even can be I've seen a man of a, not that I think hierarchy should be too obeyed, let's just say, in corporate settings, but often I've seen female managers even reply to their direct reports with that tone. Oh, I can do that for you.
Okay.
And, yeah, we don't want to give up our power too much with our voice.
No, that's something that I have not observed or paid attention to. So it's definitely something that I will do from now on, because I know it's not something that I do. So that's why I've maybe not noticed it, although you'd think I would notice it more.
No, you definitely don't do it, Janine. You really own that beautiful low register.
Yeah, thank you. But it's just thinking about that, and because I've moved out of a workplace environment, and I'm now sort of reflecting back into the people that I was working with as to who did that. I'm going to have to think about that and pay attention to that one, because it makes a lot of sense. I've seen people do it when they're presenting, but I haven't seen it necessarily in that. But I understand how, more so in a corporate type environment where you were working, how that would play out a lot more, because there's a lot more power struggle type of.
Yeah, absolutely. But also watch out for it in restaurants. So if you go somewhere, listen to how the waitress often goes up into that pitch.
Oh, okay. Well, yes, that's a good place to look for it too, isn't it?
It's one of those things, once you know about it, you hear it everywhere.
I know. And one of the things that is my pet hate, and you did mention it before, is like, this is just like the best like thing like I've ever like seen. And I did put up with two people in front of me for 4.5 hours flying back from Perth after I'd already flown over 30 hours, and they didn't stop their conversation for a breath for 4.5 hours.
Oh my goodness.
But every third word was like by both of them. So I didn't like the word like before that, but now it's one of those things, if I just stick a knife in my ear when I hear it, it's just horrible.
Yeah, and I work with a lot of, I don't want to throw millennials in it, but it does seem to be more common among that generation. And I work with women in that age group, and I say, I don't want you to get rid of saying like. If you're with your friends, absolutely use that vernacular, but you want to be able to control it so you can switch it off, especially in professional settings, because like is another, it's the sound of being non-committal. So I can't like really commit to what I'm going to say like, so I'll like, you know, just keep saying that so I've got the get out of jail free cards. And you find it as well, yeah, you know, you ask a young, anybody to describe their house, and they'll say, oh, it's got like a driveway and like a blue door. And I have to say, no, it has a driveway. It has a blue door. It's not like anything.
It's exactly, yes, use it as a simile, but don't use it to describe something. I agree. And it does, that they lose, you lose your credibility when you're using that. And if you're in a workplace environment, and or if you're working with clients, and if you're working different generations with clients as well, you really need to know how to match their language and the type of words that they use to build that connection and rapport and affinity. And if you don't see, a lot of people don't hear the things that they do as well. They don't hear the likes, the ums, ahs, however, you knows, actually is basically is all of those filler words that they use until someone draws attention to it.
Absolutely.
And then they can identify it then as well.
I'd say that's the same with all of voice, which is why I often start off my workshops with going around with my iPhone and recording everybody talking, even though it's a bit terrifying for them at the beginning. But as you say, people aren't aware of a lot of things about their voice. I say people are so busy thinking about what on earth to say, the how is on autopilot. We don't even give it a second thought. And a lot of the feedback I get is not even, wow, great tips, but Sal, I never even thought about this stuff. So I think awareness is the first step.
Yes, I agree with you 100% with that. Now, we talked about, you know, that shallow breathing and that vocal fry, but I've also heard women take that deep voice down and try and emasculate, is that the word, themselves, or, you know, try and match it with men. And then that doesn't work either. And often that does, that makes your voice sound wrong and thin too, doesn't it?
Yeah, so often when we try to sound deep, what we do is we push the sound to the back of our throat. And as you can hear, that doesn't sound very appealing at all. It's very fake. It's very put on. And our aim is to show our true, authentic voice. It's not about, I say to all my clients and everyone I work with, it's not about me giving you a good voice. It's about me helping you bring out your real voice. Mm. And a lot of that is about how we place our vibrations. I say our vibrations are the only thing in our life we want to be down and out. You want your vocal vibrations to be down and out. So we want it in the walls of our chest and focused forward. I'm probably getting a bit too technical now, but there are definitely things we can do to bring that voice from the back of the throat forward in the body to give more of a tone of honesty.
Mm. Yes. And loosening up the jaw and the lips and all of that part of it would have to be all exercises and techniques, I imagine, that you would do as well.
Absolutely. A lot of people think, oh, I need to sound serious. And so to sound serious, I'll just make everything very tight. And then again, that makes the sound tight and you sound tight and you haven't got that free, confident sound that we want to go for.
I taught aerobics for 10 years and part of it was aqua aerobics. So I'd be on the side of the pool jumping around, music in the background, and teaching 50 people in the pool, getting over the sound of them making noise with the water. So I had to learn to save my voice as well and be able to project it without yelling. Otherwise I would have killed it. The noise levels was huge.
Amazing. So it was aqua aerobics. That's a real challenge because you've got the sound of the water, the sound of being in the open air or a big space, and then also if you're doing the moves as well, you've got your own.
Yes, I learned to get very good at gestures and sign language and things like that. But it was something I had to learn to protect the voice. You know what it did? It did. Over all that time, my voice did drop in range a bit, but I think that's an aging thing a little bit as well, and learning to control it better. But yeah, it was certainly interesting. They did eventually give us microphones, but that was not for a few years.
Wow, what a great training ground for you to get your voice out.
It is if you do it right. But I do know a lot of instructors at the moment that have voice damage, so that because of not having had microphones and this need to turn the music up at a ridiculous level as well. But that's another story with there. We have covered so many different points here, Sally. It's just been really interesting stuff. Now, if we want some takeaway points, what things that you just want people to definitely take away from this conversation?
There'd be three main points. The first one would be you're not stuck with your voice. You can take control of it and everybody can speak with greater impact. The second thing I'd say is, you know, your voice is the soundtrack to your personal brand, and we often focus so much on how the world sees us, but we're forgetting about how the world hears us.
And especially with video now, isn't it? Because, and I mean, we're still being visual, but it's still the voice and the tonality and how you're delivering it that people are paying attention to.
Absolutely. Yep, it's all part of it. I often say people will, you know, put on their makeup and brush their hair and walk out and say, how does the world see me? But how many people are doing a voice exercise before they leave their door?
But often the first thing I do a webinar at 6 a.m. on a Monday morning. So I do some voice things after listening to your thing the other day. So because I know my voice is very, dry is probably the best word because it's first thing and I haven't spoken to anyone. So it hasn't lubricated enough. But so I do some of those little exercises you gave us to do.
Which it, it is tough in the morning, I will say, first thing.
I know. There's nobody else after the cat. I just have a few words to the cat, but that's about all.
Oh, fantastic. And I guess the final thing, if I could link it back to the achieving vocality, I believe, you know, every woman listening today, you all have the power to use your voice, and many of us would be in a position to do so. And I think it's important for us to think about the women who are in circumstances where they can't, which we touched on earlier. And I think that gives us a bit of responsibility to use our vocal confidence and our courage and use our voice well, because my belief is that if we can achieve vocality, then we're well on the way to achieving equality.
And that sense of self-confidence to be able to do that, and it can be little baby steps, you know, standing up for something small and having that belief in your business and speaking about that and the belief within yourself, or even speaking up for your family or something. It's just little steps along the way, but the more you do it, the more the confidence muscle grows.
Yeah,
and achieving that.
Very, very quickly, there's a study that's been done that shows if you sound confident in your voice, then you will feel more confident. So the sound of being happy makes you feel happy. The sound of being confident makes you feel confidence. That's just another reason to use your voice in a confident way.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, if people want to work with you, how can they get in touch?
Oh, I'd love them to head to my website, which is www.sallyprosser.com.au, and there's all my offerings there. But one of them is, if you just want a bit of a toe in the water or a bit of a try of it, then I'd suggest booking in for a sound check. So that's where you come along and we do a bit of recording and find out your strengths and weaknesses, and then I go through my top vocal tips and tricks.
Wow, I love the sound check. I think that's clever. Well done. But that's what it is, isn't it? It's like you're being recorded, and this is the sound check. And what do we need to improve?
Absolutely, that's it.
Yeah, well done. And of course you run workshops and you do a whole lot of things like that and go into corporations and do training for them as well.
Absolutely.
And I know, as you said earlier, you work with CEOs and top management and politicians. I mean, there is a federal election coming up. We'll probably be over by the time this goes to air, but there's always an election somewhere coming up. That a politician needs to improve. That's one of the things that drives me crazy more than anything when you're listening to politicians, is the poor performance in getting a message across and knowing how to not just to communicate their message, but to communicate it well and have that level of authority.
Yeah, when it's not, you know, it's just the words you're saying is half of it. And it's how you're saying plays such a big role. So, you know, the fluency, the tone, the inflections, all of these cues we're constantly picking up and making judgments on.
No, I totally agree with you. Anything that you would like to add before we finish up, Sally?
No, that's been fantastic. It's been great chatting.
As always, I keep saying the time goes so fast. It's one of those I just thoroughly enjoy it, and I thoroughly love learning from all of the different talent. You've given so much advice today, so I do want to thank you for taking the time and sharing that. And I know you had to move a couple of things around to be able to be available today, so thank you. It is much appreciated. Make sure you listen to the Trump thing. It'll irritate you, but then it'll be a great learning, a great resource for teaching people.
I'd love to.
Yeah, excellent. So thank you, Sally. That was great.
Thank you.
And you're welcome. And that was another episode of the We Are Women podcast, and that was with Sally Prosser. So remember that if you want to catch up with Sally, that you can go to her website, and I'll just give you that again, and it is Sally Prosser with a double S er.com.au and find out what's available. What I'd love everyone to do is to leave, I'd love you to leave a 5-star review if you enjoyed this episode, and, you know, drop me a line, let me know the type of subjects and the things that you've been particularly enjoying. My name is Janine Vosper. You can have a look and see what is available, what I'm up to at the moment. There's lots of training, online training and workshops and things happening, and that's at janinevosper.com. Thank you for listening, and we'll be back with another episode soon. Bye for now.
So, do you feel stuck in a rut in business? Visit speechperfect.com.au and download Janine's free ebook to avoid the 5 most common stumbling blocks women face in business. It's jam-packed full of tips to overcome the barriers that could be holding you back from the success that you dream your business will be. We would love you to leave a review of today's episode and share this podcast with other women in need of entrepreneurial inspiration. Subscribe to the next episode now and join the We Are Women community.